the Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Hey, the world.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
How are you, Vinny? Who's better than Vinny?
Sarah Cazell. And Jerry Carlin. It can only be
seven. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta Mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Good morning, happy Friday, Valley sports fans. Welcome to the end of another long, riveting week of Valley sports. Every week has something different in this godforsaken sports town.
This week especially.
But, oh yeah, but this weekend we've got NBA playoff basketball. The Suns' postseason journey is upon us. The beginning of Devin Booker's story is upon us.
Finally.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like it's been like a year and a half since they played a basketball game? I get why that is with the play-ins and the NBA is getting what they want by creating these made-for-television matchups that people are into. I'm not going to say they're not, but man, for the 12 teams in the playoffs that aren't involved in those play-ins, it seems like a long wait.
I remember not that long ago when the Suns were the number one seed that you were complaining about how unfair it was that the Suns had to wait so long to know who they were playing.
I think there's something to that as well. If you're the number one seed, why should you be put at that disadvantage?
It depends on the quality of the number one seed. I think in theory the thought is you're getting the worst, you're getting the dregs, so shut up. It shouldn't be an issue for you. But when you have parity like you have this year in the Western Conference, yeah, it might be a little bit of a disadvantage.
Well, we've got two number one seeds right now who don't know who they're gonna play, and they both tip it up on Sunday.
Right. But if you're the Boston Celtics and you're looking at the Heat without Jimmy Butler or the Bulls, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, how level does the playing field have to be when you've had 5 days of rest?
You're just dismissing that Heat culture, Bick?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
How many times do you got to get burned by this?
It's also a best of seven, so it's not like, okay, maybe they have a slight disadvantage in that first game.
True.
But the series and the playoffs are so long and drawn out in the NBA.
But again, every time you say that, you act like it's a bad thing. Playoff basketball is fantastic. Why do you care that it lasts 2 months? You always like, oh, it's so long. It's great. It's the stuff that we just got done with that's so long.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Everything. Get rid of it all.
Playoff basketball is fantastic.
It's the stuff that we had to
live with coming up to this point.
If the Suns lose in the first round, tell me how fantastic it is to have 3 days between games in series that you don't care that much about.
You got a point there. The weird staggering of some series, yeah, leaves a lot to be decided.
I said this in the show meeting. One week from today, our Friday show, week from today, the Suns will have only played two games in their series.
Yeah. And then they get back on a more normal schedule Friday,
that's
Sunday,
good,
both night games. But
yeah.
It's all driven by what drives everything in sports. Television.
Money.
Wow. Television and money.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
It's always the same.
Yep.
All right. Well, we've made it to Friday. We're going to have some fun. Start the show, Jared.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash. Cannonball. Cannonball
coming. Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
The National Hockey League Board of Governors approved the sale of the Arizona Coyotes to Smith Entertainment Group in Utah, and the team will begin play there in the fall. The league also approved a plan that renders the Arizona Coyotes franchise inactive with a right to reactivate if owner Alex Morello has a new, fully constructed, state-of-the-art facility for an NHL franchise within 5 years. Morello and Commissioner Gary Bettman will be having a press conference today at the Hyatt Regency in downtown Phoenix to cross the T's, dot the I's, answer questions. But one interesting aspect is that the relocated team, the Coyotes, going north, doesn't look like they'll have a name in their first year. I was joking around about it earlier in the week. They're just going to be called Utah for the first year, and they're going to figure it out from there.
I just ran into Jim Cross, the Hall of Famer, in the newsroom. Jim Cross told me that he sold his car. It's on its way to Utah, but he still owns it.
He told me the same thing. He said, I got a picture of it. I could still look at it.
I still own it, but it's on its way to Utah.
The car is
driving it. Right.
It's an active.
That's one of the things that stood out to me from Alex Morello's interview with Burns and Gambo, is the way it started. He was very quick to correct Burns. You know, I still own the team.
Yeah, great.
What team?
Good for you. Suns just a day away from the beginning of the 2024 NBA playoffs. The team's fourth straight trip to the postseason and 33rd in their 56-season history. It's the first time they will ever be facing the Minnesota Timberwolves in the playoffs. They're running out of teams that they haven't played in the playoffs. Suns are the 6th seed, T-Wolves the 3 seed, meaning Minnesota's got home court advantage for the series, which gets underway tomorrow afternoon, 12:30, from the Target Center in Minneapolis. You can hear all the action right here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app with John Bloom and Tim Kempton on the call. Pre-game coverage starts at 11:30 with Here Come the Suns, hosted by Tim Ring.
The Ringer. What is up?
Yeah, it's finally here. We'll have a lot of angles on that series. The three other series getting underway tomorrow as well. It'll kick off at 10 a.m. Arizona time with the Orlando Magic facing the Cleveland Cavaliers in game one of their series. Look, I don't think either one of these teams is going to be a factor in the Eastern Conference playoffs, but I will say this. I hope the Orlando Magic absolutely smash the Cleveland Cavaliers just for that shenanigan crap they pulled on the final day of the season.
Yeah, and I think they're going to.
I do, too.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I hope that they do.
Yep. After the Suns T-Wolves, the Knicks will host the 76ers for game one at 3 o'clock. Then it'll be the Nuggets starting defense of their title. Game one against the Lakers at Ball Arena. That game will tip off at 5:30. Four other series will start on Sunday. Those series are not all set yet. Tonight, the final two playoff spots will be claimed. It's do or die for the Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat as they meet at the Kaseya Center in South Florida. That game gets underway at 4 on ESPN, and the winner will face the top-seeded Boston Celtics in a first-round series. The Heat will be without Jimmy Butler. Reports out of Florida say he's out at least a couple weeks, so even if the Heat win tonight, get into the playoffs, he's not going to be around for that first-round playoff series. Then it's the Western Conference survival game, the New Orleans Pelicans hosting the Sacramento Kings at 6:30. Pelicans shorthanded as well. They are without Zion Williamson, who suffered a hamstring injury Tuesday night against the Lakers. Winner of that game moves on to face the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the playoff series. That will begin on Sunday. So a lot to be determined there. D-backs dropped the opener of a four-game series in San Francisco 5-0 to the Giants. San Fran led 1-0 for much of the game after a Lamont Wade Jr. sack fly that scored Patrick Bailey in the third. They would break it open with four runs in the eighth on a two-run double by Wilmer Flores and a two-run single by Mike Yastrzemski. D-backs managed only three hits in the ballgame, and starter Ryan Nelson pitched only two innings. He got struck by a line drive in the second inning off the bat of Yastrzemski. D-backs are calling it a right elbow contusion.
He's contused?
Oh, not him.
Let's hope that's all this is.
Yeah. Also,
he looked like he was in a lot. Well, I'm sure he was in a lot of pain.
Oh, yeah. He did not. He made the play to his credit, yeah, and then immediately was down the tunnel into
and
the clubhouse.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Also, another error, another runner getting picked off.
Oh, yeah. Three more hits. Yeah. That series continues tonight at Oracle Park in San Francisco. Jordan Montgomery makes his D-backs debut on the mound. He'll be faced by San Francisco lefty and reigning National League Cy Young winner Blake Snell. 7:15 first pitch, 6:30 pregame here on Arizona Sports on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. And ASU football still in spring practice, but not quarterback Jaden Rashada. Rashada, according to reports, exploring his transfer portal options. After just one season at ASU, he was the opening night starter for last year's game against Southern Utah. Started the next week in a loss to Oklahoma State, but suffered an injury that kept him sidelined until the season finale, the loss to Arizona. He was thought to be in competition for the starting position with Michigan State transfer Sam Levitt, who, according to reports, will be the starter.
Yeah, and for the people who are gripping about this, Jaden Rashada only came here because his NIL deal collapsed in Florida, right? It wasn't like he grew up wanting to be a Sun Devil and then was here for a year. And
that's what he said. That's what he told everybody.
This is
my dream come true. I've always wanted to be a Sun Devil because my dad played here.
Okay.
Oh, wait, George is on the phone?
Oh, hey,
I'm leaving.
Well, yeah. Hey, Jaden Rashada, More like Jaden rushing on out of here.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Jared,
that works.
You can put that. You can put that on your 9:30.
Too late.
Too late.
He's already scratching it off the script.
Or he would go. If he had a pen, but...
There is your splash for Friday, Luke? April 19th. I don't normally plug what guests we have on, unless they're a really big guest today.
We've got a really big guest today.
We do.
The great Bill Burr, the hilarious Bill Burr, joining the show today at 8:30. He's got four shows next weekend at Arizona Financial Theater, so we're going to talk to
Don't know
Bill
what
Burr.
He needs us for.
I don't know
yeah,
either.
I was doing the same thing.
And I've always wanted to interview him, but now I'm a little nervous about it because you never know what you're going to get from Bill.
Yeah, you're a little nervous.
True.
And it's on the phone. The Kellen Olsen also.
Yeah!
If for any Suns fan who wants to get ready for the playoff series, that's a big guess, too.
Certainly a tall guy.
He is
very tall.
Coming up next, we'll get into Suns T-Wolves. It's finally here starting tomorrow. Game one in Minneapolis. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on this Friday. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. Who will be the key for the Phoenix Suns if they want to make a deep playoff run? We'll tell you what we think at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
When your two best players are on the same page and they know each other intimately, it makes it a lot easier to have confidence. And it really simplifies things. Like last year, we were trying to figure out who's going to be the guy that we give, you know, the keys to at the end of the game. When do we give them? Where do we place them? You know, how do they play together? How do you stagger their minutes? And how do you divide their usage? And I think this year, those two have been on such a great page that it's allowed the rest of the team to settle. And so this year, I think more than anything, we're healthy. And the task in front of us is simpler. It's just go out there and compete on a defensive end and let our defense fuel our offense.
That is James Jones, general manager and president of basketball operations. He was on with us earlier this week here on Bickley and Murata Mornings talking about how well-positioned he feels this team is. And the question I asked to kind of set that up was, hey, compare it to last year when I think everybody in Suns Nation, regardless of what your connection to the team is, was just kind of hoping, just kind of crossing their fingers. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's all going to fall into place. It's Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
He fits everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, who cares if it was only 8 games? It's going to work. And it worked for a series, and then they ran into a much more connected team. I'm very curious to see what this looks like from the outside.
Yeah.
Because I agree with James Jones. This has not been the smoothest of seasons by any stretch. There's been a lot of frustration provided by this team. But they are undoubtedly more prepared from a chemistry standpoint and a health standpoint than they were going into the playoffs.
Certainly the health standpoint.
Yes.
I think their chemistry is really very much a mystery. It comes and it goes. And I've not ever seen anything like this. It's really, really bizarre. I don't know if you saw this, but in terms of the mental gymnastics the Timberwolves are doing to try to convince themselves that this is, you know, that they can win this thing, that they could be the better team. Their assistant coach told a radio station that the Timberwolves purposely went vanilla against the Suns on Sunday because they had a feeling they were going to meet the Suns in the playoffs. What a load of garbage that is.
They were fighting for the number one seed.
You win that game, you don't meet the Suns. See, but this is what they're doing. And this is why I think this team is weak. This team is so emotionally immature.
How emotionally immature are they?
They get up, they prosper, and they're going to do something dumb like Karl Anthony Towns did, poking the proverbial Suns bear. Right? And then last week, Sunday, the body language from Anthony Edwards when he couldn't get it going, the team just seemed to like look at each other like, how is this happening to us again? I don't see a lot of sturdiness with that team at all. And it's funny because the whole story of their season is sturdiness when they don't play the Suns.
Yeah.
They were sturdy against every other team. They were sturdy when Karl Anthony Towns went down. Something about this Phoenix matchup is in their heads. Devin Booker is 10-0 in the last 10 games against the Timberwolves.
It is an amazing statistic. Since Anthony Edwards has been in the league 4 years, there's been 12 Suns-Timberwolves matchups. The Suns are 2-10, or 10-2 in those games. And one of those wins happened in a game that Devin Booker didn't play in. And one of them was all the way back in his rookie season, the second game he ever played against the Suns. And he and Karl-Anthony Towns just went absolutely nutty and combined for 83 points. Mm-hmm. And they still barely won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Anthony Edwards on matching up against the Suns.
I think we can go real far, man. It's just this series right here. We got to get this series right here because they've been a tough task for us the entire season. So we come out and punch them in the mouth and get this series and get it going, get it under control, and, you know, keep it in our hands. We'll be all right.
Yeah, so he acknowledges the toughness of the series, but yeah, the mental gymnastics are pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We went vanilla in our quest for the number one seed.
We went vanilla. Sure you did.
Here's Devin Booker a couple days ago talking about the matchup against Anthony Edwards from his perspective.
I mean, it's the playoffs. You know, it's just Minnesota versus Phoenix right now. So I say Ant's not up and coming anymore. You know, he's somebody that's here. Somebody had a hell of a season this year and, you know, led his team to top seed in the West. You know, so it's a tough matchup. And, you know, it's going to take a collective hold to slow him down and, you know, just try to make him as inefficient as possible.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, Bic, that when they consume basketball, if you're a fan of a team. So there's a lot of Suns fans out there that might be listening to the show right now that only watch Suns basketball. And if you only watch Suns basketball, and you hear the raving over Anthony Edwards, you're like, I just don't see it.
I don't get it.
Because he's not been good against the Suns for a while now. He's a very good player. Don't get overconfident that the Suns are going to shut down Anthony Edwards and make him irrelevant in games the way they have. I think he's going to go off for at least a couple times in this series. The key for the Suns is withstanding and maybe holding some of those role players in check, which those guys have been very important too. Guys like Naz Reid and Mike Conley showed what he can do. He's still got gas left in the tank. This is still a very tough basketball team. However, I will say this right at the forefront. I like the Suns' chances a lot in this series.
Yeah, listen, I don't know how anybody couldn't. And I understand the Suns' history that they have to prove they can play playoff-caliber basketball on a consistent basis without a lot of the other stuff kind of getting in the way. But there is nothing about these games that they've played against the Timberwolves that should really freak anybody out. These have not been competitive basketball games.
Let's put it this way. It's very rare, and it feels like we're in this situation where, as the sixth seed, it will be very disappointing if they do not win this series.
Oh, without a doubt. I don't think there's any question about that, because this is not supposed to be a six-seeded basketball team to begin with. That's number one, right? If expectations were met this season, this would be exactly flipped. Right? The Suns would be a top three seed. The Timberwolves would be the team on the outside. Mm-hmm. And the series would be opening in Phoenix. It's not. But again, I don't think you could this is just the best possible outcome for a basketball team that's been up and down all season long. Now they're going to make good on it. They just do.
Well, that's it, though. And after the way this season has gone, the perfect ending would be everything falls into place for them and they still don't get it done. That would just be the last frustration in a frustrating season.
You always say the perfect ending.
You know what I mean.
Perfect.
Fitting for how frustrating everything has been.
Yes.
Like the perfect cap on a frustrating season.
Again, there's that use of the word perfect.
No. Fitting.
Perfect is the Suns winning the championship.
Yeah, right.
Anything less than that is not perfect. In my opinion.
That remains accurate. I think getting to the finals and losing the finals would make this season a success. So the championship or bust thing that I've been saying all year long, it's kind of true. I think getting there and playing Boston and losing, I don't think we'd walk away from that going, failure! I think if they got to the finals after this really bizarre regular season, I think we'd all rally around that.
I would certainly rally around it, but I have trouble coming off that because I've been championship or bust since this team was put together.
Because that's what they said they were.
But I just think this path that is ahead of them, wherever it ends, if it ends short of a championship, it's just different degrees of failure for me.
Like, okay.
A little bit of the failure can be patched up or mitigated if they get to the finals.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is because I've really clung to this revelation that I've had that once your team gets to the championship round, it's like all bets are off. There's really not a loser in that situation. And I've been vibing on that. And that's not always true. It's definitely not always true. But it's been true with me with the Cardinals. It was true with me with the Suns. It was true with me with the Diamondbacks last year.
True with LeBron James, which is why he's better than Michael Jordan. Agreed.
Oh,
good
shut
point.
Up, Jared.
Just get to the finals and that's just as good.
What a perfect ending to this segment.
Just as good as winning it if you get to the finals.
Do you want to say it or do you want me to say it?
Say it, Vinny.
Shut up, Jared. Enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text DRAFT to 620-620 to enter for the chance to win a reserve table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at Arizona Sports live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick of the draft. Once again, that's DRAFT to 620-620 to get entered. Coming up next, D-backs stink it up. And the opener in San Francisco. We'll get into some D-backs daily straight ahead on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports league.
Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs daily.
D-backs trying to work through some issues and start playing cleaner baseball as they open up a four-game series in San Francisco against the Giants. It would be tough, though, as they face Giants ace Logan Webb, who would be opposed by D-backs right-hander Ryan Nelson. Bottom of the second inning, scoreless. Runner on first, two outs. Nelson facing Mike Yastrzemski.
Nelson is ready. The 3-2 is swung on. Oh, it's ricocheted right off of the pitcher, who quickly gloves and underhands a toss to first, but he looks to be in some serious pain. He took a line drive off of his arm, his forearm, and he is holding it as he goes into the dugout and straight into the trainer's room.
Oh, my arm. It's broken. It's not broken. They're calling it a contusion. Nelson did make the play to end the inning, but went right into the clubhouse and did not come out for the third inning. Was replaced by lefty Logan Allen, just joining the team after having his contract purchased from AAA Reno. In the third inning, Allen gave up a leadoff double to Patrick Bailey. After an infield single by Jung-Hoo Lee sent Bailey to third with one out, Allen faced Lamont Wade Jr.
His 0-1 is swung on. That's it in the air to center. Deep enough to score a run as Carroll backpedaling makes the catch. Bailey will tag from third. He will score on the sac fly. It's 1-0. Giants.
Chris Garagiola on the call there. Giants were on the board first. And yes, the deficit was only one run, but the D-backs could do absolutely nothing against Webb. Ketel Marte and Corbin Carroll singled back-to-back to start the game, and then after that, the bats went silent. Webb retired 19 D-backs in a row until Christian Walker drew a one-out walk in the seventh inning, and then this happened.
And now they picked off Walker. Ran early. He tried to go back to the bag. He slipped and fell down. He was tagged out about 15 feet away from first base, and now we'll just go back to the dugout.
That kind of summed up the whole night for the defense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
1-0 after 7. Webb was done for the night, but things did not get easier with right-handed submariner Tyler Rogers on the mound. Randall Grichuk scratched out an infield single with two outs in the eighth. He was stranded right there as Jake McCarthy grounded out to end the inning. Giants would get their insurance runs in the eighth. Bryce Jarvis on the mound. Nick Ahmed, remember him?
He doubled
the lead off. Lee reached on an error by Ketel Marte. Then Wade walked to load the bases. Jorge Soler hit into a fielder's choice. Jace Peterson went home to get the force out. Torey Lovello then summoned lefty Kyle Nelson in a tough situation. Bases still juiced for the Giants, and that brought up another former D-back in Wilmer Flores.
Nelson sets throws, and there's a swing and a drive out to the left field corner. That is a fair ball all the way to the wall. Two runs are in. Soler stops at third. It's a two-run double, and the Giants now lead it 3-0 in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Nelson would get Matt Chapman and Tyro Estrada to fly out, but could not get Yastrzemski to do the same.
3-2. Swing and a base hit in the right field. Soler scores. Here comes now Flores. Chapman to third. Two more are in. 5-0 Giants.
Yeah, the lead could have, may as well have been 100 at that point with the dormant D-backs offense down to its last three outs in the ninth. Ryan Walker in for the Giants. He struck out Ketel Marte swinging. Then he got Carroll looking. Help us, Jock Peterson. You're our only hope. Well, he struck out too, and that was it. A very, very complete victory by the Giants.
A very
frustrating one. A loss for the D-backs. 5-0. They got shut out for the first time on the year.
Very quiet performance from the Diamondbacks. Logan Webb, I read, became the third pitcher to allow the first two batters to reach base and then record 7 innings of shutout baseball.
He's the only pitcher?
Shohei did it once, and somebody else did it once.
Of course Shohei did.
Right, exactly. So singles from Ketel Marte, Corbin Carroll to begin the game, and then it was almost literally nothing. And then Corbin Carroll struck out looking on a pitch that was looked to me almost like a meatball, and the bat never got off his shoulders. And I thought, what is going on with this guy?
Well, the really concerning part was I was looking at splits the other day. Corbin Carroll feasted on right-handed pitching all year last year. Mm-hmm. His numbers were just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
They're ridiculous in the other way. He has been so bad against right-handers.
He's slugging 293 this year, yeah. Corbin Carroll, who was an extra base machine last year.
It's worse than that. So he's got 3 extra base hits and 75 at-bats so far, which is really, really not Corbin Carroll's game at all. But the most alarming thing, only 3% of hitters who qualify for this statistic with enough at-bats have hit the ball softer than Corbin Carroll's exit velocity this season. So he is not barreling up.
He's not hitting line drives.
Nothing. No. He's popping up relentlessly. Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. It's also a reminder that we are so, as sports fans, it's almost ridiculous how we take a moment, a season, and extrapolate it over a long period of time. And by that, I mean a team wins a championship and immediately people on the air, is this a dynasty in the making? It never is what it is. Corbin Carroll had a great rookie season, and all we ever did was talk about how great that contract is going to be for the Diamondbacks. He had 1 year in the books. And we're already deciding that this is going to be the most lopsided contract we've ever seen.
The greatest Diamondback of all time, people were saying.
It's so ridiculous. We have to remember that this is the essence of sports.
I will
You're
say
competing
it is,
but against other humans.
At least
it's
had
the
a great
essence of sports, but I don't think it's ridiculous to expect that. When you put up a season like he did.
It was a full season. It wasn't like, you know, he just came up at the end of the year and did
reached
well.
Statistical levels that no other rookie ever had in the history of this
I
game,
know.
Which goes back a long time.
I know.
So if he doesn't reach that next level, it's a complete disappointment.
Well,
and maybe that's what he's struggling with right now.
Well, and again, and that's what I'm getting at. There's a lot of things that can get in a player's way.
Yes.
A lot of things from 1 year to the next, especially a rookie year on through.
Yep.
So I hope Corbin Carroll finds it. The team clearly needs him.
I think he will.
I think we all realize just how underrated and very important Geraldo Perdomo happens to be to this baseball team.
Absolutely.
From defense to offense to vibe to happiness to all of it. So again, I'm not going to get crazy about this because this is such a long season, and I do believe you hover around 500. This team is going to be fine, but games like last night, that's a little too whimperish for me.
I mean, they're an eighth of the way
for me.
They're an eighth of the way through the season.
Yep. Torey Lovello on the struggling offense, but still having belief in it.
We've got good hitters here. Maybe zeroing in on the pitcher, looking for and squaring it up. You know, looking for a little bit of slug. That's what I'm looking for. And maybe you know, need to get deeper into counts and wait for the pitch and not miss the pitch we're looking for. They do it at a very high level. When they do it at a very high level, we score runs. There's no mystery to it. But you know, there was Webb had it going today, and there was a lot of weak contact. And I respect their starting pitcher, but I believe enough in our guys to be able to slug against anybody. So we gotta find a way to zero in on the pitch we're looking for and not miss it. I think that's probably the common denominator.
So the offense has been quiet. The base running mistakes continue. The sloppiness in the field continues. Here was Torey Lovello on the sloppiness.
I think these guys are really forcing things, and they're trying to do too much, too fast, in the wrong space. So sometimes you got to let this game give you what it can, slow it down, make the plays, process it right, not trying to do too much. You know, Walk knew what he did wrong the second it happened. Ketel Marte makes that play 99 out of 100 times. So I just think we're trying a little bit too aggressively to make things happen in a very positive way. We just got to let the game come to us, slow down, and do what we do best.
Yeah, I did a little research yesterday on the defense especially. 2 games ago was the fifth game, that last game against the Cubs, the fifth game already this season that the Diamondbacks had 2 or more errors. Jody Jackson had pointed that out. They didn't reach that mark last year until the 114th game of the season or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just crazy. One other thing on the D-backs before we move on.
Yeah.
Remember when we used to play the game, did the D-backs reach 500?
Uh-huh.
We got to get a new one. Did Jace Peterson get a base hit? And the answer will always be no.
loyal to a fault sometimes,
Holy
Torrey Lovello.
Moly, I know.
Throughout his whole managerial career, we've said that.
He's versatile in the field. Okay. He hadn't got a hit since he's been in town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dexy's
I don't know what to say about
Midnight Runners
that.
Had more hits, babe.
Oh, come on, Eileen.
D-backs continue that series today. Looking forward to watching Jordan Montgomery work for the first time in a Diamondbacks uniform.
Yeah,
good
agreed.
Pitching matchup tonight against Blake Snell. Coming up next, Alex Morello speaks for the first time as his team is still alive, technically. We'll get into all the details next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
No.
Everybody, it's Bernsie. The Diamondbacks are going to see one of their major offseason acquisitions debut tonight in San Francisco. So what should we expect from Jordan Montgomery? We'll tell you what you need to know on today's Bernsie and Gambo Show, 2 to 6 on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
It took me a while to understand that, probably a week or so. A lot of soul searching, thinking, and praying. And they're right. I just can't do that. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the NHL. It's not fair to anybody. And that's why I made that decision. Let's be clear. The reason I did this is because I told them I am not going to sell the team. We have to work out a plan that makes sense for everyone so I can continue to move forward with the team over a period of time. And that's when they decided to go, it's not an expansion team. It's more of a inactive to activating again. And the process begins on June 27th.
That is Alex Morello, the owner. He wants you to know he's still the owner of the Arizona Coyotes. He came in and talked to Burns and Gambo yesterday. Wide-ranging interview, over 20 minutes. If you missed it, you can see it in video form. You can listen to it on ArizonaSports.com or the app. But he explained there, that was kind of one of the meatier parts of this and the process that they went through. He said Gary Bettman came to him in March and said, "What are you doing? Can you look your team in the eye and give them any assurance on when you're going to have an arena?" And he said no. So he had this come to Jesus moment and said, "I got to let the team go temporarily."
Yeah, it sounds like a convenient rationale.
It does.
If you will. That doesn't necessarily carry the ring of truth. And it's certainly not when compared to a lot of the stuff that I've read about when this stuff started to get wonky between the Coyotes and the NHL. Because we do know that Gary Bettman has been our number one ally. In fact,
he has.
The running joke has always been for the Coyotes is that we are the one hockey town that cheers Gary Bettman and boos Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. You won't find that anyplace else in the NHL, folks. Well, it's sort of how wacky we've been. So that to me seems to be a real convenient repackaging of the truth.
Yes, but he also packaged it as an ultimatum set forth by Bill Daly and Gary Bettman from the league. And here's where I got confused. This ultimatum from the NHL standpoint seems to be based in, okay, they're playing in a college arena. People are talking. It's 2 years in. How long are they going to be in this arena? Now, they were under a lease agreement for next year. Had the Tempe vote gone through last May, they would have been playing in that arena for 3 more years. Alex Morello clearly said in the interview with Burns and Gambo that the numbers were astronomical, so much better. They were so much more economically competitive playing in Tempe than they were in Glendale.
Right.
But then he also said, out of the other side of his mouth, we can't compete unless we have an 18,000 seat arena.
It was
all over the place.
It really, really was. And I'm not sure with everything you heard and saw, if you walked away from that hoping he gets a franchise again or not trusting him.
My takeaway was what, and I thought Burns and Gambo both did a good job presenting the questions that people had concerns about. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he did anything to engender any kind of confidence. I walked away from that interview like, this guy's not getting this done. Sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly my feeling as well. That's if you're asking me exactly what I felt listening to that interview, because I did. I wanted to feel what he said. And it was sort of like, okay, do you believe that this is going to be the next owner of our hockey franchise if and when it comes back? So, but again, the fact of the matter remains this. This land auction is going to happen. And if he wins it, then okay, prove it. You know, to quote Ron Wolfley, prove it.
Yeah. There was a little bit of rewind, too. Burnsy asked, hey, last May, this Tempe thing didn't go through. A lot of Coyotes fans were frustrated by it. What went sideways with the Tempe project?
When the public does not understand and they believe that all you got to say is a billionaire tax help or giving free money to a billionaire, they don't go for it. And even though it's not true, I'm not asking for anything. I wasn't asking for any tax abatements help from the public in constructing the arena. They didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't understand that and they didn't accept it. But it's funny because now you've got the Kansas City Chiefs, who just recently won two Super Bowls.
Lost the vote.
And lost the vote. That tells you everything you want to know. The public doesn't understand it. If they think it's some kind of a tax abatement or free money for a billionaire, they're opposed to it.
Not our fault. It was the voters' fault. They didn't educate themselves. You got to educate the voters. They're uneducated.
Yeah, that's
get your message out there.
That to me, in retrospect, was a big mistake. And anybody who knows how to work elections, and there are people who do, PR people who know how to what you have to do and the boxes you have to check. There are things that you have to do. You have to spend money. You have to pound a message. You have to get on the streets. You've got to talk to the right people. And you look back on what they did. I think we all assumed, okay, come on, hockey arena or a landfill, duh. Well, we're all sports fans. That is a duh to us. But if you're trying to convince a marketplace that is predisposed to say, that is inclined to say no to anything like this, you've got to get people past the fact that they're not paying for this. But I also think in a larger vein, I think this idea of winning any kind of vote for anything related to a sports stadium, bye-bye, no more. People have finally realized these sports franchises, their valuations have gone through the roof. Why in the world do you need community support?
I agree. I agree with you as long as it's attached to public funding. Mm-hmm. If anybody's asking for public funding, Alex Morello brought up the Kansas City example. That's the perfect example. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about a city that is gaga and has been gaga over its football team forever. And they're asking for public money. I mean, the Hunt families, they're loaded.
Well,
they're asking for money for a stadium, and the voters said no. That's where the big failure again was. This was such a unique deal presented to the Tempe voters because it didn't. How do you not get that message across?
Right.
I think people cost you anything.
People who even heard the message thought, "Well, this is too good to be true."
Right. They don't trust
something. Yeah, something's gonna.
They're gonna get you somehow, some way.
But yeah. Who was it? Was it Todd Walsh we had on this week who said, "Like, does it feel like the mood in the valley is that boy, we really want a new arena here?"
Yeah, that was Todd.
Yeah, so, and then he was referring to like the upcoming potential Coyotes home.
We have a lot of facilities here.
Oh yeah, you say that again.
We sure sprawl.
Yeah, again, you can catch up that whole interview at ArizonaSports.com on the app, on our YouTube channel. It's everywhere. Alex Morello and Gary Bettman also having a press conference in downtown Phoenix today at 11:30 to answer some more questions.
Okay.
So, and there's more questions to be asked. I thought the guys did a great job of asking a lot of questions, but there's still some stuff that doesn't make sense in this whole thing. Coming up next, Monty Austinfort, Jonathan Gannon getting ready for the NFL draft, which begins 6 days from today. They're still sitting at number 4. How many times is that phone ringing? We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.